The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
With the latest data indicating that around 26% of all COVID-19 cases are healthcare workers, working on the front line during this pandemic presents some huge challenges for those treating patients. The creation of COVID-19 hubs and the redeployment of staff to complement the work being done in hospitals, not to mention the public adherence to HSE guidelines, means that the challenge is being met by everyone. So we wanted to get some insight into life on the front line, and we're joined by Dr. Catherine Motherway, President of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland, and by Dr. Donal Heron, a GP Registrar based in Ballinamore in County Leitrim. You're both very welcome to the programme. Catherine, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to ask you about our demand on ICU in terms of the number of beds we have, the number of beds that are occupied, and how well those beds are served by ventilators and by staff.
That is, in fact, a variable feast. So as you know, we had about 257 critical care beds before the start of this pandemic, and the HSE has made some significant funding in relation to increasing that bed number probably permanently by at least 25, and we've ongoing recruitment in that matter. And in addition, we have in all of the hospitals created areas where we can ventilate people. That might be in some hospitals an ICU. In my hospital, it's a HDU and a critical care block that we built 10 years ago. And so we've all identified areas where we can ventilate patients. And because elective surgery has been not performed of a non-urgent nature for the last 3 weeks, we have redeployed staff from various areas, including theatre, where nurses would have skill mix that is, you know, consistent with minding our sick patients. And we have located all of our old ICU nursing staff, and they've all come back to us. And we have located lots of other staff because ICU is a team sport, so we have porters, cleaners, physios, all of whom have all come back and try and staff up and increase our ability to care for what we call the surge. So we all have what we call surge plans, and we all are operationalizing those surge plans, which is a fancy word for saying is finding out how we can run it. So on a given day, you know, depending on your staff and who is absent and who might be sick and who are absent because of contact tracing, you might have a variable need. But I would think that at the moment, we have capacity in the system. Dublin is under pressure, but they still have surge capacity. Some of the Dublin hospitals have had to transfer patients to other hospitals. So Dublin is obviously under pressure, and the Northwest has had to transfer some patients. Those of us in the East and the South and the Midwest still have normal capacity in our normal ICU numbers. So in my hospital at the moment, we have normal capacity in our ICU numbers, and we have the ability to immediately expand by at least 8 to 10 beds if we need to, if we have a sudden influx of patients, such as we have seen in other jurisdictions like in Italy, where they got massive numbers of patients very quickly. So we all have plans to surge, and it's all variable. You hear various numbers. So on each day, we have a bed information system, which, to be fair, I haven't looked at fully this morning. I do know that we have 143 confirmed cases in ICU, of whom 112 are ventilated at the moment, with another 25 suspect cases. We also have on that system the number of open beds and the number of staffed beds where we can find spaces for other patients if we need to.
Now, the question of staffed beds, and I mentioned that 25% of those, 26% of all of those COVID-19 cases are healthcare workers. But the skill mix you talk about, I mean, to intubate a patient for a ventilator requires the services of an anaesthetist. And, you know, if the surge comes, where will the pinch points be?
The pinch points will be in critical care, I think, and also in medicine, because for every patient that you have in the ICU, you're very likely to have two and or three on the wards. So, and that would be what they found initially. They had one patient in ICU, but they had three or four on the ward at the same time, all of whom required oxygen. So the pinch point will be in both areas. So all of the hospitals will end up having staff, like perhaps surgical staff will come and help us in the ICU, and we'll direct teams. So critical care nurses will direct teams of people who don't normally work there. I will direct a team of doctors who don't normally work in ICU. And they've all been getting online training and upskilling for the last 3 to 4 weeks. And the advantage we have had over Italy has been, in fairness, that our public health measures, people staying at home, washing their hands, and doing all of the things they've been asked to do, in particular the physical distancing, has, I believe, helped diminish that surge, and it has also given us time to create capacity and to prepare our hospitals for an influx of quite sick patients. And to do that, we've had to divert staff, both medical, nursing, and of all grades, to try and come in and back us up and shore us up. So we have plans, all of us in all of our hospitals, for other doctors to come and help us. So yes, it will be an anesthesiologist or an intensive care doctor doing the intubation, but subsequently it may well be another doctor who doesn't normally work in ICU helping you, and you can direct activities and you can actually go around and say, yes, you go in there and turn that patient in bed 9, or you go and increase that drug. We will be able to direct a team who wouldn't normally work with us, but provided we give them backup and training, this will, please God, work. These are all our plans, hopefully.
Because I noticed yesterday the graduating class from UCG, they kind of did it remotely, that they are graduating earlier so that they can be available to help out with the surge. In the same way as, I suppose, the Gardaí and Temple Moor got their spurs earlier than we all expected. So a lot of these younger doctors and nurses and others will be on a very steep learning curve, and that's where your skills come in to keep an eye on them as they learn.
We'll have to support them and train them. And there are very difficult times ahead. They'll need both support professionally. They'll need support psychologically. We'll all need support psychologically by the end of this, including the entire nation, I think, in fairness. This is a really difficult time for us. We're no longer visiting each other. We're no longer with our families. And our staff are going to come in here and they're going to actually deal with some really sick people. And we're going to see extra deaths, which is always difficult, particularly when you're younger professionally. So it will be really important that those of us who are older and longer in the tooth will actually support our younger staff and will give them direction. And I'm well aware that the HSC are organising support for us all, because a whole lot of us are going to need it. The entire nation is going to need it.
I saw a consultant interviewed in Britain on Sky News, I think it was, and it was... You know, there were two emotions. One is, this is tough. But the other emotion was, this is our finest hour. This is what we do. And there was kind of a stimulus in being able to do it at a very high level, a very challenging level.
There is. So we've made these plans, all of us. And while none of us wish to enact them, we are going to be, I devoutly hope, really proud of the job that we are going to do for people who get sick. The people at home need to be really proud of the job that they're going to do to prevent them getting sick, and we are going to do our level best to do the best we can for everybody who comes in. And yes, there is great satisfaction in dealing with a really sick patient in an ICU and getting them out the other end of that well, and particularly going back to a normal life. And if we don't succeed in making people better, there is also really good satisfaction in giving very good end-of-life care, because we do know that not everybody survives critical care. And for years we have been delivering critical care. We both attempt to save as many lives as we can. And for those people who will not survive, we make sure that they are well cared for at the end of life. And that is something that everybody needs to remember. We're going to take care of everybody in whatever way we can. And that will prove a challenge as the pandemic sweeps over us. But if we continue to adhere to the public health measures and our hospitals cope, we'll save an awful lot of lives. And for those that we can't, we'll take care of them as compassionately and as carefully as we can.
Dr. Catherine Motherway, President of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland, thank you very much for joining us. Listening to that conversation, Dr. Donal Heron, a GP registrar based in Ballinamore. Donal, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, in a GP practice, and I know that you will be moving to a COVID-19 hub in a while, but what has been the pattern of your communication with your patients?
So what we've noticed, Pat, the main thing is we see less patients face-to-face. So most GP practices are trying to phone triage and speak to people over the phone as much as possible. Many GP practices even have brought in video consultations through WebDoctor and Nua Health, which is fantastic. But one of the challenges, or one of the things that is worrying about GP, is that we are seeing less patients. So the people with the common illnesses are staying away. And I just like
Are they afraid of kind of wasting your time, or are they afraid of becoming infected?
I think it's both. I think people are afraid that they might become infected, but also are afraid. People are very responsible, and they believe that general practice is under a lot of pressure, so they don't want to waste the GP's time. So for those people in particular, I'd like to say that GP is open. GP wants to hear from you. Please ring your general practitioner rather than calling in. You're not wasting the GP's time. The GP now actually gets paid for phone calls, so they really want to hear from you. And I wonder if I could mention three groups of people in particular that we want to hear from. The first group is the people who are in an emergency and those who have vague symptoms. So we don't want people with chest pain sitting at home thinking they have heartburn. Please ring your GP. Or those people who have possibly have a stroke, may have lost power in one side of their body, may have slurred speech, please ring your GP also. But equally those people with vague symptoms. So if somebody has a cough for the last 6 weeks or 8 weeks and it's not going away and they've never had it before, or if they've lost some weight recently and haven't planned to, those people I encourage to ring their GP as well. The second main group I'd like to talk about is the people with chronic illnesses, long-term illnesses, and those on potent medicines that require monitoring. So particular people with diabetes, they still need their blood sugar checked and they need their kidney function checked. People on powerful medications like methotrexate for rheumatoid arthritis and lithium for bipolar, they also need regular bloods every 3 months. They need their kidneys checked, they need their blood count checked. And the third main group is childhood vaccines. It's really important that we encourage parents to still bring their children in for vaccines. When this COVID crisis calms down, the last thing we want is an outbreak of preventable diseases like mumps and measles. So children need their MMR, they need their 6-in-1, and they need their meningitis vaccine.
Now, Donal, what about the people who were calling you up saying, I think I have COVID-19? Have those numbers diminished as people realise that what I have really is not COVID-19?
Exactly. We had a big surge about 2 weeks ago when the health authorities relaxed the criteria for testing for COVID. And I spent all my day speaking to people who were concerned. Since then, the health authorities have made the criteria for testing much more strict, and people ring less. And probably some of that is also the education. People realize if they have a head cold or symptoms of a head cold that they self-isolate for 2 weeks, and probably less people are ringing their general practitioner for clarification of that now.
Okay. Now, you are a proponent of wearing masks in public, not necessarily the surgical masks that doctors would wear, but some sort of protection.
I think so, Pat. I think the evidence is clear now that the majority of the spread of COVID-19 is by people who show no symptoms at all. These people can be spreading the virus through droplets. To me, it makes logical sense to put a physical barrier in front of the mouth, which will reduce droplet spread. And indeed, this is backed up by the studies. Nature, 3 or 4 days, released a study showing that face masks reduced the spread of droplets and even aerosols. Now, the Asian countries have been using face masks for years. Even George Zhao, the director of the Chinese CDC, last week said that he thinks the biggest mistake that the US and Europe is making is that people are not wearing masks in public. The American CDC changed their guidance last Friday night to encourage Americans to wear face masks in public. Other countries have followed suit or have been doing it already, like Austria, Bulgaria, Bosnia, Israel, Turkey. So these countries are encouraging everyone in public to wear face masks. The thing is, we have a shortage of face masks in the country, like you mentioned. We need to encourage people to wear homemade masks. And these can be made out of materials such as coffee filters, T-shirts, Hoover bags even. There's a wonderful graphic on the CD website showing people how to make these masks. And it's important that people would wash them regularly and in a 60-degree wash as well. So we know they're not perfect in the
Not perfect, but, you know, putting a barrier between you, if you're infected, even if you're asymptomatic, and everyone else is good. And as the checks put it, their mantra was, you know, my mask protects you and your mask protects me. So there we are. Donal, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Donal Heron, a GP registrar based in Ballinamore in County Leitrim and soon to be working in one of the COVID-19 hubs.